Welcome back to another edition of the Image Doctors here at Nikonians Talk Radio. Today is Thursday, November 9th, 2006. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Back from the AMPAT.
Yep, so you don't have to do another podcast by yourself.
Yeah, that sucked.
So sad and pathetic.
It was
really.
So lonely.
It was short.
It really sucked talking to myself, you know, but I'm always I seem to always manage to do that.
Yep.
Well, what we got on tap for you today is sort of a two-prong attack. Rick's going to give you his report on the 6th annual Nikonians Photo Adventure Trip, or ANPAT.
Yep.
So he just got back from about a week ago. And then we are going to do our annual, now we can call it annual because it's the second annual,
yeah,
stocking stuffer edition of the Image Doctors, where we'll give you some hints for ways to spend even more of your hard-earned money.
Something that we've been told we're good at, so we're going to do it some
impression.
More.
And I want to thank everybody who contributed by sending in their emails to us, yeah, to come up with these ideas.
And actually, this one is a triple threat rather than a dual prong, because we're going to do one last thing, which is a quick tip. And we're going to talk a little bit about setting black levels and things that you can do there.
Yep, absolutely. So
so hang on for that last one.
Right. So how was the AMPAT, Rick? I mean, I saw some of your photographs on your website there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We'll put the link up for it, you know, so you can just kind of visualize what it was like. But it was great. I think everyone had a tremendously good time. You know, fantastic group of people. I can't say enough about the group. Just everyone got along super, had a really nice time being together. And then we went out and did some fantastic shooting. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about what that was like, and then, you know, everyone's favorite,
right,
talk about equipment, what worked, what didn't work.
Remind me now, how long was the, how many days of shooting did you guys get?
Well, we started on Sunday, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, whatever that turns out to be. Although,
take your shoes
Friday,
off if you need to count
Friday
more.
Although it was originally a shooting day, ended up not being a shooting day because the weather, you know, kind of turned on us. It got very, very rainy.
Yeah, fall weather back, yeah, east. And
but actually, that turned out to be very good because all the other days, you know, the other 5 days of shooting, were very busy. We were going from dawn until, you know, well after sunset.
Typical AMPAT,
yeah,
experience.
We didn't eat dinner typically until 8:30 at night, and then finished that up at about 10, and we were all tired at that point.
And so you guys had 24 people on the trip again, roughly?
24, 25, yeah.
And then Bo and JRP are there.
That, yeah, included in that, okay, that 25 number.
Well, that's always fun.
Yeah.
Get to spend a little time with the founders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. And so the shooting was good. We, you know, we had three different vans and circulated all around Smoky Mountains National Park and some of the adjacent areas, like along the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Oh, very cool.
Yep. And shot a lot of waterfalls, streams, a lot of the scenic areas. The fall colors were nice.
Yeah, it looked like you had some great colors,
yeah,
in some of those shots,
yeah,
I saw.
Absolutely. And our timing was good. You know, we hit the peak of color at the lower elevations, you know, where the waterfalls were and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Higher elevations, it was a little bit more sparse, but that's just the way it is. You can't have it at every single altitude. But we had some really nice color in a lot of areas, and so I think everyone came away with great,
nice,
shots. And like I said, a lot of it was social too. It was just fun being with a group of like-minded people.
Right, and it's always easier to get up at the crack of dawn when 24 other people are getting up with you, mm-hmm, at the crack of dawn. That's what I've always, mm-hmm, come to discover.
Yeah. So on that last day where it was raining, what we ended up doing was getting together in a conference room that we had at the hotel where we were staying, and we went through images and talked a little bit about them. You know, everyone, or at least a high percentage of people, offered up some images that they had taken. We took a look at them, and really nice shots from the group. I was quite impressed. And then I did a little Capture NX tutorial for the group, and that was kind of fun.
Cool. So you brought your laptop?
Yep, I did.
Neat.
Yep. So, you know, in terms of the other part of it, you know, what worked, what didn't work.
You were going to try some new stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, and
some new toys.
I did take a few toys. We'll talk about the old toys first. And the old toys were, took the D2X along with the D200 as a backup. So I was shooting all digital. You know, a bunch of flash cards. And then in terms of lenses, I took my 12 to 24, my 17 to 55.
Mm-hmm.
I took the 105 micro Nikkor VR lens.
The new one. Macro lens.
Yep. And then I took the 70 to 200. And I also took a TC14E teleconverter. Never actually used that. Didn't need it. You know, the 70 to 200 was long enough for what I was doing. And then I took a bunch of grad neutral density grad filters, 1, 2, and 3 stop hard filters.
So you had your Koken holder. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then also a 2-stop soft. And some of the new things that I was trying, well, first polarizer, which we'll talk more about
mandatory.
That, but that was mandatory there for sure. We'll talk about why in a sec. But I also took along a Singray LB color intensifying filter, which is a new version of their color intensifying filter. It has less of a filter factor, meaning it doesn't reduce the amount of light quite as much as the previous version. It's only about 2/3 of a stop. And that worked great. What it does is it makes...
It's probably only about 2/3 of my paycheck, too.
Well, yeah. They like all their Singray stuff. makes the reds, yellows, oranges really pop out. And it also does some nice things with the greens, too.
So how'd that work for you? Did you really like the result?
It worked great. And actually, there were several people using color intensifying filters on the trip. JRP was using one for a lot of his shots. He was using the B+W one, which is another good one. Mm-hmm. And there were several others, too. And those did some nice things. Now, you might ask, well, you know, couldn't you do that in Photoshop? And there's some tweaks that you can do there, or in, you know, the raw conversion process if you're mm-hmm. using Capture. But it is a slightly different look, and it was nice. It did some good things to the greens, too.
And as always, I mean, we kind of always recommend, if you can avoid doing something in post...
Yeah, if you can get it right,
get it right the first time,
and part of it is just psychological for me too. I kind of like the idea of getting it right first, and you know, so would I use that filter again for fall colors? Yeah, cool. I would.
Now you had another Singray filter toy, didn't you?
Yeah, it was the Very ND, which is a neutral density filter. You know, a circular thing that goes in your lens, and it varies the density between 2 stops and 8 stops. And
so it
I thought that
works
was
like a polarizer, huh?
Yeah, it's actually a circular and a linear polarizer stacked on top of each other, and then you twist it, and it varies the darkness. I thought I would use that for shooting streams and waterfalls. The way it actually worked in practice is I never used it. I think it'll be useful for other things in the future, but
now, part of that was because of the conditions.
Yeah,
I mean, you had some overcast days where you didn't need to worry about.
No, I was, you know, and you're already under tree cover, so typical exposures for me were like F11, F16 in some cases, and I was shooting down around 2 seconds, four seconds.
Which is plenty to get the water motion.
Yeah, there was no issue.
No worries
and
there.
And I really didn't want to slow it down any further for those shots.
But if you had been in a different set of conditions where maybe it was brighter sun and you wanted to get that motion blur, you know, especially people who have like a D70,
right,
or a D100, where your lowest ISO setting, or D2H, where your lowest ISO setting is 200.
Yeah, then it becomes more useful.
Yeah, that becomes a useful filter.
Yeah, I think it's a cool filter. Boy, does it get dark when you have it cranked to 8 stops. You know, you're certainly not going to do any focusing or really even being able to see the scene at that point. But it's a cool idea. Expensive as heck, but you know, we'll see. I know I'll use it in the future, but I didn't use it on this trip. And the polarizer, I mentioned that briefly. I use that all the time. And incidentally, those kind of shutter speeds that I was talking about were with a polarizer.
Right. And you're going to lose about, 2/3 of a stop or a stop?
A stop and 2/3.
Yeah, okay.
Almost
2 stops with a polarizer. Yeah. So you got to be careful when you're doing that.
Yeah, so that slowed down the shutter speeds a little bit too. But that was just essential when shooting those waterfalls and streams. And the reason was, you know, and a lot of people think, oh, polarizers for skies. Well, that's one thing it's good for, but actually I use it more for other things. And the shots that I was taking didn't even have sky in the image. It was, you know, just trees and leaves and rocks and the stream.
Anything that has water reflections, a polarizer is very good at controlling
that. And, you know, some people started off not using the polarizer, and, you know, I showed them a few things with it, and it's, you know, it does an amazing thing. I mean, it just, you know, it deepens all the rocks, you know, the color of the rocks. Mm-hmm. So they go from being this really light, reflective thing to the point where you see the dark, actual rock. And nice things for the contrast, takes the reflection off the leaves so the colors really get saturated with the leaves, and it was just essential. So, you know, just as a note, if you haven't tried that for shooting waterfalls and streams, a polarizer is pretty much mandatory.
You know, I would say by this point, if you've been following our show for any length of time over the last year, you've probably noticed that we really recommend polarizing filters because they're just so darn versatile.
Oh, they are.
And they're more for than for
and if you're shooting the kind of subjects that you know I was doing there, you can have them on some pretty darn wide angle lenses, like I had them on my 12 to 24 with it down to 12 or 14 millimeters, and looks just fine.
Yeah, you're not going to get
issues
with
even
the banding sky
in the sky.
Issue. Yeah,
no, that's a
that's
different
true.
Thing.
That's true.
So they're very useful on a lens like that. So
and you had a tripod.
I had a tripod, and I had pretty much the same tripod that most of the people had, which is a Gitzo 1325 or 1327.
You know, it's funny because I've been on a couple of Ampats from years past, and a lot of the people who go on the Ampat are repeat customers. That says something about the quality of the the trips in and of itself. And people who would start off with no polarizing filters and flimsy tripods come back the next year suddenly with that stronger tripod, and because you realize after that week that having a good tripod is really essential to making those kinds of shots work. You need, if you're going to take a 2-second exposure, you better be darn sure that you've got a rock solid support for your camera.
Yep. Now, to hold all this stuff, I was using some Think Tank stuff, and we've talked about that in the past, and I know you like it a lot too. I mean, you're the one that kind of showed me.
I kind of discovered that product.
Yeah, and it's good stuff. Now, what I took when I was flying out to Knoxville, which is where we flew into, I had to go on regional jets.
The regional
Colorado Springs to Chicago, and then Chicago to Knoxville.
And for those of you who don't know, a regional jet is kind of like a Learjet. It, they hold 50 to 70 passengers.
Yeah, it's kind of like a torture device in some ways.
Yeah, the flights are usually not that long, no more than 2.5 hours, which is sort of the length. But the overhead bins are really small.
You could only put not even a regular size pizza box in there.
Yeah.
Just not a lot of height.
Yeah, so like the standard, for example, the standard rolling carry-on bag that most people bring will not fit in an overhead bin on a regional jet.
So if you bring one of those, you're forced to check it, which always makes me a little bit nervous. I kind of hate doing that, even gate checking a bag.
Yeah, so the airport addicted bag, which is what we reviewed last year, it really won't fit in that. That's too big.
It'll fit in a normal one, but not in a regional jet. So the thing I tried, because it was, looked like it was a very nice size for the kind of equipment I was taking, it turned out to be was their new airport antidote. And it looks just like a small version of an airport addicted. It comes with a laptop case that you can have in there. When you stick it in the overhead compartment, you want to remove it and tuck it under your seat. The laptop bag. And then the airport antidote bag just slides in perfectly. It's a
very
perfect fit.
Yeah, and you brought it here. Brought it over to the Mountain Lair, and I took a look at it. It's the same solid construction that you expect from any of their products.
The same clever tips, everything.
Just a little smaller. And you fit just about everything in there,
Brought
everything that you mentioned that you took fit in that bag, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the D200, the D2X, 70 to 200, 1224, 105 macro.
17 to 55. Teleconverters, grad filters.
The whole wad. That's great.
Exactly.
And then it's probably not terribly heavy when...
No.
Because
it's pretty light.
You can't put the big gun lens in that bag.
Right. No, it was very pleasant to use. And then what I did is I stuck the Modulus belt system stuff in my suitcase. I took a big suitcase, and that's where the tripod was stashed. So I did check that. And the belt system stuff was just stuck in there unloaded so I could kind of smush it up good. But, one of the things I've found is I like to go kind of light with that stuff. I don't like to put a whole lot of the cases on the belt. I just had three of them, and I had a thing called the trim changer, or I can't remember. It's something like that.
The little accessory thing.
Yeah. It's a little rectangular kind of bag and with several slots in it. And in there I had my cable release. I had, a lens cleaning cloth. I had my flash card case. I had
an
extra
battery. Flash card wallet that comes in. Yeah, that's a nice little thing that you get.
So an extra battery and hyper focal distance setting card, and you know, just a bunch of little miscellaneous things. So I had that clipped on the belt. I had a thing they call a bum bag, which is just a plain bum bag or fanny pack in the U.S. Realize that's a bad term elsewhere.
We won't go into that. We're not politically correct internationally.
No. But what I had stuck in that was I've got a Tamrac folding filter wallet, and it fit in there just perfectly. And that held my polarizer and some of the other things. I also had a gold and blue polarizer Singray thing. I didn't use that a lot. And the pictures I took with it really didn't turn out good. Sometimes that thing works and sometimes it doesn't. It didn't work in this case, but I didn't try very hard.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, I had all, you know, sorts of miscellaneous filters in there. And that was great because I had, what I would do is when we get to location, if we weren't going to be far from the van, I would take the airport antidote thing with me and throw it on the ground near where I was shooting. And then I had the belt pack on, and that way I could easily and quickly get to stuff, and I wasn't fumbling.
Yeah, that's what I found last year when I field tested the modular system. Mm-hmm. It was just that it was so nice to have everything accessible, and I didn't have to deal with the shoulder harnesses of a big backpack on my back.
Yeah, exactly.
Either. So although it doesn't matter in the winter, but in the summertime that's nice because you don't sweat as much.
Right. Now, what I did when we were going on a little bit more of a hike and I didn't want to carry the bag, even though it wasn't that heavy, I just took the belt system and I would take two lenses. I would kind of pick out which ones would be good candidates. And, you know, a pretty typical combination was the 17-55 and the 105, or the 17-55 and the 12-24. It just depended on the subject matter. And so I had one lens on the camera, which I just carried. And then one in the a lens bag that was also on that belt. It was the 50 size that they make. And that was great. Slung the tripod over my shoulder. You know, those carbon fiber ones aren't too heavy, so it was pretty comfortable for hikes. And that was it. And it was easy to carry the stuff around. It was very accessible. And I didn't have any trouble maneuvering over slippery rocks and streams and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it was kind of a guess about what would work well, but it was a good guess.
Cool.
You know, from the case standpoint, that worked fantastic.
So
and I would do it again.
So that think tank stuff, for anyone who's interested, we'll put a link on the show notes page, but it's thinktankphoto.com, I believe, is where you
can,
and you can order it from them, and I think they have distributors in Europe
now,
as well.
If you get it off the Nikonian's website, you get a free gift. Also,
last time I checked, you could still do that. So if you go to the Nikonians.org homepage and click the Think Tank photo link, you should be able to order through a special page and get a free bonus.
Yeah, and the gift is a pretty nice thing. It's like the lens case I was mentioning, or one of the Pixel Rocket things for holding flashcards. There's several options.
A chimp cage too for holding a DSLR body, and that's like a $40 value.
Yeah.
Or something
they're nice items for free.
So, free is the best price. Yeah. So don't say we try to part you with all your money because we're giving you a chance to get something for free.
Yeah. There you go. You're saving money.
You're saving money.
Yeah.
With the Image Doctors.
Right. And so you know that's the stuff that worked.
All right. That pretty much sums up the AMPAT.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want to spend the rest of our time with you this week talking about ways that you can spend money. But this is our annual list of stocking stuffer ideas.
Right.
And so we pick these because we've either heard good things about them or we've used them ourselves. And we tried to keep the price under $150.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, it'll be a lot cheaper than that, but that we sort of capped it at that because every now and then you find something that's really cool for about $150. And the first thing on our list is something that neither Rick nor myself have actually tried, but we've heard wonderful things about it, and it's called the Expo Disc. And it's spelled EXPODISC. And you can find the Expo Disc at expodisc.com. I'll put a link to it on the show notes page. And they are these screw on like a front filter thread. They screw onto your lens, so they come in different thread sizes for different lenses.
Right, and it's translucent.
And it's a translucent disc that is used for doing custom white balance settings. So you take that exposure when you do your preset white balance in your digital camera.
Yeah, you just kind of point it at your light source.
And then you snap a picture.
Mm-hmm.
It has a similar function to those of you who use D2 bodies, is that little white eye on the top of your camera. Right. So it does that. The Expo discs are calibrated to be, you know, neutral density, etc. They have versions that will create a more of a warming effect if you if you want that. I think it's called the portrait version.
Right.
And they're not terribly cheap. They run between $100 and $150. Again, these are all U.S. dollar prices. Depends on the size of the filter thread.
Yeah.
So,
but if you have a lot of white balance issues, if you shoot in weird lighting a lot, especially fluorescent stuff,
like indoors
or
in gymnasiums and things,
yeah, exactly.
Or mixed lighting
it
situations.
Might be a good purchase for you. If you're shooting more outdoors, the auto white balance works pretty well anymore, but it still might not be a bad idea. You know, last year we talked a little bit about the Weibel gray card thing, and that's another option on it. And that's something I still use, and those are cool. Now, the Expo Disc people also make another version that's less expensive called an Expo Cap.
And it's sort of a snap-on.
Yeah, and it actually replaces the lens cap.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs between $50 and $80. I guess it's not guaranteed to be quite as neutral, but it's probably not, pretty close.
Yeah, it's going to be fine. And it does create a warming effect as well. So if you're looking for something that's dead-on neutral, you'll want to go with the Expo Disc. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for just a inexpensive way of getting portrait lighting that you want a nice warm cast to, then an Expo Cap might be right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. And I would think for those people who use the D200, where you don't have that little sensor eye, this might help you nail white balance in tricky situations.
Yeah. Or D80s or D70s or the whole gamut. Okay, next thing, filters, fun category.
We're going to always add this to our list.
Yeah.
You can always check to make sure you got filters.
The ones I mentioned earlier won't meet the price criteria, so scratch those off the list.
That's right.
But there are some other candidates. We did talk about the polarizer, though, and you can certainly get some good polarizers for less than $150
threshold. Make sure that you get, for your autofocus cameras, make sure you get what's called the circular polarizer.
Right.
Most of the time, that's all you're going to find these days. But if you see something called the linear polarizer, stay away from that because that'll mess up your autofocus system.
Yeah. Try sticking to the better brands. I mean, Hoya makes some good filters. Nikon certainly does. B&W, Heliopan. Those are all
good
brands.
I have Tiffin ones, and they're fine.
Yeah.
But polarizing filters are not terribly cheap, depending on the... if you want, for example, one in a 77mm filter thread, you're looking at about $80 or $100 probably. Mm-hmm. But it's that filter that you're going to use more
often. It's the most useful filter there is.
So if you have $100 to spend on a filter and you can only pick one, pick a polarizer.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you're shooting film, you know, and we talked about this one last year, but it remains a good choice, a warming filter. And my favorite is the Nikon A2 filter. It just... you know, just a smidge of warmth, and is a little bit different than an 81A filter, which is a little bit more yellow. This one has a little bit of magenta in there, too, and really nice look, and it's wonderful for taking portraits or just situations where the light is a little bit cool and you don't want to do anything extreme. It'll make it nice. So if you're shooting slide film especially, a Nikon A2 filter, and they make them in different sizes, is a great choice.
Right. Now, that's pretty much not an option for digital shooting.
No, don't screw with them.
Because your white balance is going to...
If you're using auto
white balance, it's going to compensate for it, so just don't worry about it.
Just take it right out. So
learn to use your white balance setting instead of a warming filter with digital shooters.
Yeah. And then we had neutral density grad filters. And I talked a little bit about those earlier, but they're essential if you're shooting landscape stuff in interesting light. It's very difficult to get good shots without those, unless you're doing some sort of digital blending technique.
Yeah.
And I still like using the grad filters. I think they're the easiest thing. They work really well, you know, and it gets back to that idea of get the image right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of other photographers are starting to feel the same way after trying the digital blending a little bit. They're going back to using their grad filters for a lot of stuff just because it's so easy and quick and the results look good.
If you want to go with that setup, we recommend either a 2 or a 3-stop soft grad would probably be a good place to pick one, because mm-hmm. You're going to need to buy a holder, because these mm-hmm. are rectangular filters. So you'll want to get something like the Koch and P holder, mm-hmm. which is a little it screws into the front filter thread, and then it has a rotating slot that you can drop these rectangular grad filters into. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a whole little kit there. And again, we don't ever have a price on this because it really depends on the brand. You can spend a lot of money on grad filters and go with, say, the Stingray brand, or you can spend, you know, get the Koch filters and spend significantly less.
Yeah, and if you're only going to get one, probably a two-stop soft mm-hmm. is a good way to go. And then I would add a three-stop hard after that, and then you can go down the list, and I certainly have.
Yeah. If you're into landscapes, this is really a
I used every single one of those grad filters that I own, during the trip.
Cool.
So, all right.
And you never thought this next one would have made our list in concept. Uh-huh. But we have a lens that you
can
buy.
A lens. And it's the Nikon 50mm 1.8.
Which now comes in an AFD variety.
Right. And it's cheap.
It's about $100, yeah. Depending on where you go.
Yeah, and it's awfully sharp. It's tiny and it's compact. It makes a pretty nice portrait lens on a digital body.
Yeah, very nice.
I use
mine all the time.
On a film camera, it's just a nice general purpose lens when you want to go light. And they are sharp as heck, very contrasty. A lot of bang for the buck.
And they're fast, so you can use these indoors. Mm-hmm. I mean, having an f1.8.
Yeah, if you're using zooms for a lot of things, this is something that takes up almost no space in your pack. And you can, shoot in much lower light. So I would definitely put that on the list.
I've tested this. I mean, wide open, it's fairly sharp. And by f2.2,
it's just sharp.
It's very sharp. Very, very sharp. Yeah.
Yep.
Can't say enough good things.
And you can always find one of those used, too, for not
$50.
Much more than the price of a lens cap.
Exactly. What's the next thing we got?
All right.
Here?
We had several. It's an item that we have not used, but we received several recommendations.
I've seen a prototype at the PMA show.
Okay.
I knew it was coming out, but I hadn't actually seen one in action.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. But it's the Hoodman Loop.
Yeah, the Hood Loop.
Hood Loop. And they run around $70. And it just looks just like a film loop in a lot of respects. And it's intended to go on the LCD display on the back of your camera to shield light and I think give you a little bit of a magnification boost, not much, just so you can see the image clearly.
Right.
Now, sometimes in bright light,
this thing is cool. It's got a lanyard. You wear it around your neck.
Mm-hmm.
So you just hold it up to the back of your LCD when you want to do your really refined chimping.
Mm-hmm.
I think you mentioned it has a diopter adjustment on it, so I think up to +3.
Mm-hmm.
So you can correct it for your eyes. So it really shades everything and allows you to see what's really on your LCD, no matter what kind of lighting condition you're in. And it doesn't stick to your camera, so it's not going to.
Yeah, and I could see getting one because the other one, with the flip-up.
The flip-up caps are.
It just got in the way a little bit too much for me.
They're good, but they don't shield all the light.
Yeah. This seems easier.
This is a cool thing, and like I said, it doesn't stick on your camera, so there's nothing to really lose. You wear it around your neck.
Yeah, and it's got a little diopter adjustment just to compensate for.
Right, it's rubberized. It's not going to scratch anything. Mm-hmm. And we've heard a lot of good things about it.
Yep. The next item is really cheap but very useful, and it's a thing that we saw originally at PMA earlier this year, and they're the little Spuds things, and what they are is a neoprene case.
Spuds with a Z.
With a Z, yeah, SPUDZ. It's a little neoprene case that you can clip onto your strap or your camera bag or a lens case.
I've got one right over there.
Yeah, and I've got one over in my bag. And inside it, it's got a microfiber lens cleaning cloth.
Right, you sort of tuck it into the little fabric case when you're not using it, so it's a little...
It's tiny.
Yeah, it's like a little potato spud.
Yeah.
And then you just pull out the microfiber cloth, and it has a little clip, so you can clip it to a zipper or whatever, just any kind of lanyard mm-hmm. or attachment wherever you want, and then you've always got a microfiber cloth.
Right, and this is something that we actually sell in our site's Pro Shop.
And you can get it with the Nikonian's logo on it.
It looks very cool. I think they sell for like $8.95 or something like that. And my advice would be just get a bunch.
Yeah.
I've
got one in the clipped into the pocket of my winter jacket shell.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm out there, I use it for cleaning my sunglasses or whatever.
Right.
It's just right there.
But I would get like three or four, put one on your camera strap, put one in your lens case. If you've got binoculars, put one on that. They're just great because you're never hunting around for that lens cloth.
And, right.
And sometimes I just can't find them. It's the wrong time. And since I've had those clipped on my cameras and bags, I find I'm using them all the time. You know, it's like on this trip, I would get a little bit of water sprayed on the front of my lens. Just take it, wipe it right off. No problem.
Very handy. Cool. And so as long as you're at the Nikonian shop, which is the photoproshop.com URL, there's all kinds of other Nikonians merchandise, like the Optek camera straps or the Nikonians t-shirts. I mean, if there's a Nikonian that you know or in your family, why not get something that says Nikonians on
it? Right. Okay, next item, magnifying eyepieces. And there are two versions of these made right now. I think we've talked a little bit about these in the past. The DK21M, which will fit the D200, and we believe will fit the D80 as well.
But don't hold us to that.
Yeah.
We need to find
out first.
Double check
that before you buy
it. But it looks like it might fit a D80, too.
I think it should. And the DK17M, which fits the D2 series.
And even an F6, I think. But
yeah.
I don't know why you'd want it with an F6.
F6.
But if you have a D2H, a D2X, or XS.
Yeah, and I think a D1.
It'll fit on those.
And in both cases, they give roughly a 20% boost to the magnification of what you're seeing. And that's just perfect.
Yeah, it really is.
What it ends up doing is taking it up pretty much to the level that you would experience with a traditional film camera. And that's just about right.
And there's not a lot of distortion either. We really like this product.
Yeah.
I have one permanently mounted on my D2X.
I think if you're an eyeglass wearer, it might not be the best choice.
Yeah, there's a little bit of issue with the exit pupil.
Yeah.
But
I've got one on both my D2X and my D200, and I just leave them on there all the time. I've never taken them off. And it definitely makes manual focus a little bit easier. And those aren't too expensive either.
And you can just find those in your, you know, find them at, you know, look in your local camera shop or online. Just do a search for the DK17M or 21M.
Yeah. All right. Next one.
Well, in my opinion, you can never have too much memory. So if you're looking for something this year, the good news is that both compact flash and SD memory, depending on your camera, have really come down in price.
Right.
A couple of years ago, I got a 4 GB SanDisk Extreme 3, and it cost me over $400, I think. And now you can have one of those for under $200.
Right.
So they've come down by, you know, over 50%. Roughly speaking, you can get a 2 GB card in the Extreme 3 variety of for $100. So if you get one of the cards that maybe isn't as fast, it's going to be even cheaper. I know SanDisk came out with Extreme 4s. If you want to use those, you'll want to include one of the new SanDisk readers to take advantage of that faster speed.
Right.
But you can never have too much memory. If you've got old memory cards lying around, like old 512s, and you've upgraded to a D200, you know, those things aren't really going to be very useful because you get 3 pictures on them or something like that, especially if you're shooting in RAW. So
yeah, don't throw them away. They're a good emergency
backup. They're nice to have in your bag, but you know, you can get a brand spanking new fast 2 GB card for $100. And we were talking about this earlier. We kind of recommend with any of these 10 megapixel and up DSLRs, 2 GB is really where you want to be.
If you're shooting RAW.
If you're shooting RAW, you know, yeah. I mean, yeah, you can get by with less with
and
JPEG.
And 4 is even nicer.
4 is really nice, depending on the subject that you're shooting. Mm-hmm. If you've got a sports enthusiast in your house and you're shooting a lot of high frame rate, you might want to look at the 4 gig cards. But, you know, that the price can't be beat right now on some of these, you know, and these are really good cards. The Ultra 2s are probably even cheaper. And then there's the Lexar cards. I mean, we're not going to say any one is better than any other one. But the Lexar and the SanDisk, you really can't go wrong with those in your Nikons. So that's one, you know, always think about. And they're small. They fit in stockings, too. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. If you've bought a DSLR recently, maybe you haven't heard some of our other shows, but I would, you know, we probably talked about this last year, but I would strongly recommend getting a sensor cleaning kit from Copper Hill. the CopperHillImages.com kit. I mean, the whole thing, including a lens cleaning kit, microfiber cloth. It's got a sensor brush and the swipes with the PEC pads and eclipse fluid. It's $49.95 or something like that. Under $50, the stuff is safe to use, and the online tutorial at CopperHillImages.com really tells you how to do it all. So,
coupled with that, the other smart thing, and we forgot to put this on the list, but a Giotto rocket.
Yeah, the rocket blower.
Yeah, and it's spelled G-I-O-T-T-O, just like the Italian artist and architect.
They're about $30. They're not cheap.
I was thinking they were less than that,
or maybe
but whatever. They're
but
not,
still, they certainly fit within our category.
But they work great.
Yeah, they do work great, and that should be your first line of defense against sensor dust. Would be keeping your lens.
It's the simple thing, you know.
Keep it
just
clean.
Open up the shutter, blow it, and that typically gets off everything.
And use it to blow the dust off of the rear elements of your lens, too, because that's somewhere that people neglect.
So, yeah, get one of those. They work fantastic.
So you can be looking at a whole cleaning, and then, you know, when you use the PEC pad method, you know, that package of PEC pads will last you 5 years, seriously.
Yeah,
so it's a great value at $50 for that whole kit.
Yep. Then another thing on here, a piece of software. We talked about it in the previous episode, and that's Photomechanic. It's around $150. It really is nice stuff. And, you know, on this trip, I had my laptop with me with an external hard drive. And when I downloaded my cards to the laptop, I sent the images to both my hard drive, the internal hard drive, as well as the external. And
sweet.
So I had it backed up, and it was just as easy as possible. Did renaming.
Yeah, and everything. It's fast.
It is nice.
It really is fast.
It really works well. And that's at camerabits.com.
Yep.
Next one, I'm going to put in a shameless plug for you because I think it's a nice thing. And that's the ebook that you recently did on Capture in X. I know I converted a few people at the ANPAT, and I think you got a few orders.
I got a couple of nice little emails from some of our ANPAT.
Yeah,
all you ANPAT people, thanks for for your.
But it is a very nice book, and if you're using NX, especially, it doesn't matter if you're new to it or if you've used it for a while, you'll find useful things in there. And I think it's what, $24.95 for the download, and
yeah, you can download it and have it, you know, delivered via email, essentially, and you just download it. That's $24.99. If you want a CD, it will be $29.99 plus applicable shipping charges. It ships worldwide. And one of the nice things is that all of the NEFs that are used in the tutorials are included either on the CD or you can download them separately, and then you can work on the same pictures that are in the book.
Right.
So,
yeah. So cool.
So, yeah, that's our shameless plug. Yeah. But it certainly fits in the budget.
Yeah.
And if you spent the money on getting Capture NX, or you've got the trial version this Christmas and you're playing with it, you know, might as well learn how to use the darn thing, right?
Yeah. All right. Next
I always recommend spare batteries.
Yeah. It's always good to have one, I think.
ENEL, whatever. And you D2X owners, you can now upgrade to the ENEL,
whatever it is.
3A or 4A or whatever it's called, the higher capacity. I have not done that yet, but they will.
No, I don't feel terribly compelled because the original was pretty good.
I have two, and I've, you know, really never run out of one unless I forgot to charge it.
That's the real scenario, and I have done that. So that's
so having a spare when you're traveling is a good thing.
But it usually, you know, one usually gets me through.
I've never run into a shoot where I've run out of a battery that was started out full.
Yep. And then the last item on there were a couple traditional books. Books are always good things. And one person suggested the book that we had mentioned a few podcasts ago on real world sharpening.
Yes.
And it is a good book. You know, it can get a little bit deep, but if you really want to get a handle on sharpening,
it can
and
cause
you want
your
to learn
to
more
times,
about the topic, you know, that we discussed a little while back.
It is thorough.
It's a good one, written by Bruce Fraser.
And any of Bruce Fraser's books are going to be good, pretty much.
He's a very good author. And I always like honest-to-God photo books, you know, filled with real photos as opposed to technical stuff. I think that's one of the best ways.
Those are more inspirational, I think.
Yeah, at least they are for me. I would rather look at those. And a new one that I think I may be getting for Christmas is the Galen Rowell retrospective book that just came out this year. And just having taken
a
look at
it. Is that a shameless hint to your wife?
Oh, she already knows.
Okay.
It was actually her idea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't even think
of it.
You've
got her trained pretty well.
I know. That's good. So,
so the Galen
Rowell
retrospective.
Yeah, but, you know, honestly, there are lots of great books out there. And, you know, both of us like nature photography, so that's what we tend to think about. And
yeah.
You know, Art Wolf has some very nice things.
I like Art Wolf's book.
He uses the wrong brand anymore, but, you know, we won't go into that.
Yeah, there's a sordid tale behind that from what I've heard, but anyway.
Yeah. Any rate, good photographer and lots of others out there, but, you know, consider.
Yeah, like we always mention the John Shaw books, you know, but put in a plug for those. They're good, too.
Yep.
Anything that has a lot of artwork, because, you know, sometimes you don't want to read the words.
Right.
You just want to look at the pictures.
Right.
And if you get a Galen Rowell book, you'll really enjoy the pictures.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think that's enough shopping tips to get people in trouble.
So we'll finish off with our new segment here at the Image Doctors, which is our tip of the week, or the tip of the every other week, I guess,
right,
as the case may be.
Yeah.
And this is just
doesn't have a good ring to it, though, does it?
Tip of the every other, tip of the iceberg.
No, but yeah.
We'll just call it tip of the week.
Bi-monthly
and you'll get,
tip.
You'll get
you
two
know,
a
whatever.
Month.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Tip of the podcast. All right.
People are always looking to improve their photos in post-processing and to get that punchy look that you used to get with slide film.
Right.
And what's missing here? You know, they come to say, what's missing here? Why does this picture on my screen not look as vibrant?
Yeah.
Why? What is wrong? And there's a real easy thing you can do
right.
to adjust that. And that's don't adjust the black point like you would with your slides where you set it, where you move the black point slider and the levels adjustment or the curves adjustment to that spot where you can just start to see like the threshold of black pixels showing up.
Right.
Go up a little higher than that.
Right. And this is especially true for things like landscape shots.
Right.
Can be true for wildlife.
Clip the blacks a little
bit. And here's the way of thinking about it is if as a film user, you might have used Velvia for that kind of subject, then what you're going to want to do is clip some of the blacks.
Because that's what happened on the film.
That's what happened on the film. Slide film, like Velvia, had a whole lot less latitude in the shadows than digital cameras have. They've got an expanded range there. And that can be a great thing under some circumstances. But frankly, in a lot of situations, you don't want that much latitude.
Right.
It ends up resulting in an image that looks a little bit flat. So consider ratcheting it up a little bit so you start clipping some of those blacks. And, you know, what you can do is at least, you know, another, you know, 5 or 10 percentage points in, something like that.
Yeah,
it's arbitrary. Just play with it and see what you like.
My starting point for a landscape shot is to move the black point slider from 0 to 10. And if I'm shooting a wildlife shot where I want a little punch but I still want to retain detail and like feathers or fur, I move it up to maybe 5. Of course I also adjust in RAW, you know, the tone curve, but but as a general rule, 10 or 5, you know, that usually starts clipping the blacks just enough to give it a little bit more punch.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend that for a portrait.
No.
But for an outdoor kind of shot, consider trying that.
Again, if you might have used Velvia for the subject, then consider doing it, and you'll be surprised. It gets punchier, perceived color saturation goes up, and it's a very useful thing. So
and
just
it adds
give it
almost
try.
A depth to your image on the screen that just makes them pop more.
Yep. Yeah, I've been doing it for several years, and it does make a difference.
Now, if you've got a tip that you would like to suggest to us to use on the air for an upcoming episode of the Image Doctors, please send it to us via email at talkradio@nikonians.org, and we will gladly accept your input, and if you're lucky, we'll use your tip on the air.
Yep.
And for doing that, we'll give you absolutely nothing other than your name used in an Image Doctors episode, because we're poor. We spend all our money on lenses.
Yeah. That is the truth. All right, let's talk a little bit about next week.
Right.
One of the things that we're going to talk about next week is tripods, and that's a subject that we haven't hit, so more ways of spending money. But hopefully we'll give you some ideas for how to spend it wisely. And then, what else?
I don't know what else, but
we'll figure something out.
We'll come up with something.
Yeah.
Maybe Nikon will announce a new camera by then, and we can talk about it.
Yeah, you never know. But one of the things I think would be good to talk a little bit about is travel tips. I was just in the UK this last week, and You know, they've changed some of the policies there.
Oh, yeah.
Made them a little bit less restrictive than they were for a little while. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then guidelines in the U.S. too. Photographers have some special benefits that most people don't know about. And we'll talk
including
about
the
that.
Including the TSA some of the times.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll arm you with some of that data that we
how to travel safe when you're on
courtesy of a nice airline. Email from someone.
Yeah, and I mentioned before, but the spaces are filling fast for the 7th ANPAT.
Oh, my God.
At the 7th ANPAT, you can go to the ANPAT forum, and I believe the dates have been set for the first week of October, you know, starting like September 30th through October something.
Yeah.
It's in Yellowstone and the Tetons National Parks.
Heck, by the time this comes out,
by the time this comes out,
full.
It may be full. But
it's amazing.
You never know. There may be a wait list, so check it out. And because the last time I checked, there was already 25 people signed up or 24 people signed up. So
yeah.
I don't know what the limit is exactly, but it's got to be getting close to being full. So
right.
If you were thinking about it, you better jump
hurry.
On that. Yep. All right, well, thanks again for tuning in to us on this week's Image Doctors, and don't forget to check out all of our episodes at podcasts.nikonians.org. So until next time.
And if you get a chance, vote for us. You'll see the link for doing that
yep.
on the podcast
on Podcast
page.
Alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, send us a vote. Well, until next time, this is Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Signing off. We'll see you next time.
All right, bye-bye.